response to my DNS query, which is clearly not the original data and therefore could not pass the DNSSEC integrity check, a validity check. It's premature to go too far down this path. We don't have enough data on the table. I've done some reading of the various proposals, and I think from just a mindset and sort of general orientation point of view, that the right thing to do is to view the coexistence of V4 and V6 as a as essentially as an overlay network, and that there are separate trust properties associated with that overlay network. And DNSSEC is not designed to solve that problem, but it is certainly a piece of the overall solution, and I'll leave it at that. And I think, well, that must be my last slide because it's not going anywhere. Yes, that is my last slide in any case. And also I'm out of time, yes.
Thank you very much.
So that's a tour. I don't know if it's complete, but it's enough to chew on for a while. And I thank you all.
Thank you, Steve. Steve, you just stay on stage because the thing that I was so impolite and interrupted, Steve, is to give you some minutes to ask questions, so you better do it now, where I could just have Steve still talking. So any question for Hjalti? I think you have the greatest opportunity ever to get the answers.
Let's see, what do we, oh, we have it. For anybody who's not been on stage here, these lights up here are coming rather directly into our eyes. Oh. So it makes it a little hard to see. We can see, but so give us, so I apologize if we don't look like we're being immediately responsive as we squint. Oh, you've raised the lights, excellent.
First one.
Yes, thank you. Alex Meyerhofer from Nick.at speaking. I've just thought it was just a rough idea that there are some more creative uses of DNS that might have problems with DNSSEC. What I'm thinking about is the use of DNS for load balancing purposes by boxes who do like live load balancing based on the web server behind it. And what also came to my mind actually this morning was the use of DNS in captive portals behind wireless access points where you get redirected to the login page before you continue. So has there been any work done on trying to figure in which weird and creative ways the DNS is being used besides the common use that we all know about?
Yeah, that's a good question. We've looked at Google and Akamai, for example, I think are relevant examples to the first of your questions, where there's enormous amount of load balancing and shuffling and repartitioning. We don't have the final answers, but based on the conversations I've had, I believe that it is entirely feasible for them and for others to offer a service which is consistent with DNSSEC, all the records are signed, and it accomplishes the kinds of strategies that they use today. The hotel situation is... And similar situations where you have you attempt to reach your favorite homepage and you get instead a screen that comes from the local environment that says please log in here. I actually haven't tried to think through exactly what happens there, but it's quite obvious that that is not consistent with DNSSEC, that your local system is not going to accept that answer as a validated, it won't be able to validate that answer. Again, in a way, if you look at this from a sort of theoretical point of view, there's a bit of a multi-layer network going on. And one path you can take in analysis of this is that you're sitting in a last mile situation and you have a different trust relationship there. And a different path that you can take is that you simply have to know that you are in a connection establishment sequence, which is going to have different trust characteristics than the DNS. And Liman, you sat down. Did that mean that I dissuaded you from any successful discussion of this, or did we cover the point that you had? Yeah, one of those. All right. Anyway, thank you. Good questions.
I would like to add something to that. The hotel situation as far as DNS is concerned, I don't know if every implementation of the typical hotel network actually changes DNS, but DNSSEC is kind of designed to protect against such things, so it will never work by definition. But if they use routing tricks, it's still possible. And as far as other creative uses of DNS go, I think that as long as you know in advance what different records you're going to serve, it's pretty easy to work together with DNSSEC and just serve up the right ones as the situation comes along. But things that start changing stuff will have problems, as it is now.
Next question, thank you.
Roy Ahrens, Nominat. Hold on. Stay. Yes. So the just to add to that, when we together with PIR and others looked at, let me put my laptop down. Looked at possible market situations for deploying DNSSEC. We talked to a group that we never thought had interest in DNSSEC whatsoever, and those group were domainers. Domainers are this part of the industry that basically registers names, put a search page behind it, and try to get profit from that. The reason they like DNSSEC is because of providers currently, ISP providers, who put up a search page when you can't reach the name you want to go to. And if providers set up a search page for that, it will take profit away from those domainers. So domainers are actually interested in DNSSEC as well. That came completely to me out of the blue. So, I assembled a few questions for the both of you.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, first remark about Jelte slides. So I start with the order of presentation. You mentioned about that when you want to revoke a key, the key actually has to be available. We at Nominat are planning to use a trick, and the trick is to already generate a revoked key, you generate a key. We sign that key, of course, but we also sign a revoked version of it. So in the event that we lose access to the key, we can still revoke it because we have the old version of that key. Sorry, we have a revoked version of that key. Of course, you need to store that revoked version very, very securely.
Yes, and you'll have to make different signatures if you have a lot of keys, probably.
Yes, but that's correct. It seems that one of us is confused about a statement I made earlier about HSMs. I never said HSMs were easy. My comment was, I don't want to iterate that whole discussion. My comment was with regards to tools that were being used by a TLD that claimed not to work. We have used similar tools. Were from RigLamp, and it turns out that they work perfectly.
In that case, I misunderstood you.
That's
for fine. Which I apologize.
Thank you. Then there's two things for Steve. At Nominat, Stephen Morris, who's here by the way, and John Dickinson and Johan Ehren, I understand they're working together on a draft that deals with timings as well. It deals with CAS, key and signing policy. I understand from your comments that you're working on a draft together with Oliver Goodmanson on similar timing issues with regards to rollover and transition stuff. So I just want to make sure that you understand there are two efforts here. Maybe it would be good to combine efforts on this matter.
Yep, absolutely. And I'd hope that we'd have something out a long time ago. So I will follow up with you and make sure that we make contact at the earliest possibility. and bring all these pieces together. That'd be good. I certainly have no interest in having divergent or competitive efforts at all. It's just a question of getting as much clarity and thrashing out the corner cases as we can, so that the community as a whole is not presented with the complexity and confusion that I think surrounds the multitude of timing issues.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. And the last part really is on these RSTEP issues that you've summarized on the three slides. I either missed or misinterpreted one specific issue. I think you tried to address that, but I wasn't sure. That issue is specifically if you have, for instance, SE signs their zone, Root signs their zone,
yes,
and the SE key goes stale because you don't address that SE key anymore because the Root is signed. Now, there, specification, the RFCs that which implementations refer to, right? The RFC doesn't specifically say anything about which way to handle this. But the implementations currently, they handle it as follows. So if either of the two keys is broken, it won't resolve.
Yes.
While others are saying if one of the two keys resolve, it should be valid.
Yes, you're absolutely right that if both keys are extant and in existence and they're not consistent, or one is broken, then you have a potential for a not good situation. My hope is that the common situation will be that when the parent is signed, that the Trust Anchor repository will smoothly phase out its copy. And by smoothly phase out, I mean something on the order of the same key will be used in both the parent and the Trust Anchor repository for a period of time. Then when the time expires for the key, it will be taken out of the Trust Anchor repository but continued, re-signed in the parent until it's clear that it gets flushed from all the caches and so forth, and that we just have a seamless, non-inconsistent phasing out of the old thing. That would be, I think, the best practice and would be the norm. The trouble comes if people don't do that, and I think if they don't do that, then they're, in some sense, looking for trouble, or they're being uncautious about the way they operate things. And the second point that you make is that there is some confusion about what the proper behavior is in that case,